This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're answering your questions. Your questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. Oh, by the way, there's another way to get questions to us. You can go to our webpage at drhoffman.com on a PC or Mac, and in that large screen format on the right side, there's a box that you can click on, and it prompts you to record a question. And those questions get routed to our weekly radio program. We read them on the air, and we answer them live on our weekly Intelligent Medicine broadcast. So there are ways you can get questions to us that enable you to get answers.
Okay, we've got an email from Eric, who's in Finland.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. I recently listened to a podcast where the topic you covered was soy.
Now, guess what? You notice this guy's in Finland, and he's Finnish, right?
Yeah.
Does he have a Finnish name? Just Eric.
Eric.
Which is probably Finnish.
Well,
and his English is
I don't want to say his last name.
But does
name.
It sound like a Finnish last name?
possibly. Possibly.
Yeah, well,
I don't know what a Finnish last name is going to look like.
It would be unpronounceable. I'm not going to say his last name. But it sounds like he has sort of a European name. So
right.
Notice
right.
The English is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
These Europeans are amazing.
They all speak
great English.
They do.
They watch American TV programs.
Mm-hmm.
They watch The Sopranos, and they watch Game of Thrones, and their English is dead on.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Eric, do you watch Vikings?
Right.
Ragnar Lothbrok. Anyway,
right. So
a podcast listened to recently where the topic you covered was soy. Yes, I'm quite sure the study you referred to was quite upbeat regarding soy and breast cancer, though their findings must be considered specious, as according to Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, the master nutrition-based cancer specialist, who had far greater success in treating this dreaded disease compared to mainstream medicine, made it ever so clear that soy is the most powerful food agent that destroys trypsin and chymotrypsin, the natural defense against disease that's found in both our own body's pancreatic enzymes and supplements.
Right.
What say
you
about that?
So what this guy is saying is he's invoking an argument that there may be some truth to, which is that if you believe, as Dr. Gonzalez believed, that powerful digestive enzymes could digest away cancer.
Mm.
And that's the James Beard theory. It's not James Beard. James Beard is
the food guy,
the foodie.
Yeah.
I think it's John Beard, who is a guy who in the early 20th century enunciated a view that you could take high-dose pancreatic enzymes and, in effect, proteolytic enzymes. You could break down the walls, so to speak, of cancer, of solid tumors, and in effect dissolve them away. This is a controversial theory.
Yeah.
It's not well acknowledged by conventional medicine. So right there, although tremendous respect for Dr. Gonzalez, who pulled off miraculous cases, I've seen some long-term survivals.
Yes.
There seem to be many paths to success in alternative treatment of cancer. And some are diametrically opposed. Some may use high-dose genistein and diadzin as treatment, say, for prostate cancer.
Right. Those are components of soy.
Those are components of soy. So, we would have to ask, do a seance with the late Dr. Gonzalez to hear what he has to say on this. Unfortunately, I just have an iPhone here, and it's not equipped to do that.
Right.
We don't have the app for that yet.
No.
but maybe with the...
Lap for the local medium.
The iPhone 10, I think, may have that app. It's got facial recognition.
It better. It's expensive enough.
And maybe it does seances.
Maybe it does seances.
Into the afterlife.
Right.
With our lost loved
right.
ones. So, you know, you've got to look at the evidence, though.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
And the evidence is that it does not seem to harm the prognosis of women mm-hmm. with breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
at least according to the latest big study in China, if they use some soy.
Yes. And the rationale behind that is, in the two schools of thought, as you know, or that the weaker phytoestrogens in soy are taking up space on the receptors, blocking the endogenous estrogen,
they
which may
like
be more
tamoxifen.
Powerful.
They act like
yes.
tamoxifen.
Yes, yeah. like a yeah. natural tamoxifen.
Like a CERM.
Right.
It's called a selective estrogen receptor modulator.
So that's its advantage, right. if indeed it works that way.
And there's another mechanism by which soy works. It has a lot of something called tyrosine kinase in it, which actually may be an interrupter of some tumor pathways.
Mm-hmm.
So there's evidence for both the protective effects of soy as well as
kinase.
The exacerbating effects of soy
right.
because
Another
it's estrogenic.
Enzyme.
And it's mm-hmm. it's an ongoing controversy.
It is.
And if you there are certain sectors of the shall we call the alt nutrition movement. We got the alt right and the alt left.
Yes.
We've got alt nutrition that's
uh-huh.
kind of like really the very hardcore mm-hmm. nutrition community who say, don't touch soy. It's
yes.
poison. That's yeah. what the, what do you call it, people say? The
Weston A. Price.
Weston Price people
mm-hmm.
say. That's mm-hmm. one of their contentions.
Dr. Kayla.
And, you know, you could say that soy is, in a way, a non-paleo food, an artificial food.
It's a legume.
A legume that may have lectins in it.
Right.
It also has things that interrupt digestion.
It's a goitrogen because of the, yeah.
Because
it destroyed trypsin and chymotrypsin.
It has trypsin inhibitors.
Right.
So it is, it's a problematic food. And plus, it's a lot, mostly GMO these days.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So you'd have to get
And then, of course, you get
non-GMO.
The soy oil. Which, according to a recent study, is even more devastating than high fructose corn syrup in terms of weight and causing fatty liver and
yes.
potential for metabolic syndrome.
Throw out your mayonnaise, everybody.
Which is a Trojan horse for a lot of soy oil. And throw
That's
out
true.
your commercial salad dressings that you
yes.
buy in the bottle. Because they may put a little smidge of olive oil in there, but it's mostly cheap soy or cottonseed
right.
oil.
It makes more economic sense
right.
to do
so,
that.
So, you know, these yeah. are... philosophical arguments that could go on and on.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Right. And the other scientists, the other school of thought who think that, who believe soy is bad is that those phytoestrogens are actually joining the estrogen party and too much
right.
estrogen in
right.
the body. So,
right.
again, this is still controversial. We're waiting to find answers ourselves.
And the
ourselves.
Answer may lie in
yeah.
the specific molecular... genetics of the cancers
yeah.
that we're discovering, for example, that certain chemos work best in certain subtypes of cancers. Like there's not just lung cancer or, you know, or ovarian cancer, or there are subtypes and every individual has a different variant.
Mm.
And there may be some people for whom the soy effect is deleterious and some for whom the effect is beneficial.
Yeah.
We're really not at the point where we can discern that now.
Right, right. But we'll stay on top of it. Eric from Finland, thank you
yes,
very much.
Yes, and thank you for listening. And, you know,
yeah.
obviously you are a true aficionado of intelligent medicine because you asked a very, very discerning and intelligent question. Now's a good time to share a message from one of our sponsors, so here goes.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. And now back to our Q&A with Layla. So what's our next question, Layla?
We have an email from Ray. Is it important to take supplemental probiotics every day throughout the year? Or would it be adequate to take them, say, for a month, at a time, or semi-annually? Well, different probiotics for different reasons, number one, that would be something. I don't have anything against the use of probiotics on a daily basis. I think it's only helpful. And even probiotic foods, if you're eating some of those on a daily basis, you're still introducing probiotics as well as prebiotics.
You know, there's so many unknowables about probiotics.
Yeah.
It's
still a new science.
Yeah. And the question is, you know, how much of what you take actually takes effect?
How much of it is seeding?
How much is seeding? How much grows and develops within you? But there may be a benefit to taking probiotics that are even undetectable in your stool. They may act, for example, the way we discovered penicillin was it was a soil organism that turned out to inhibit other soil organisms. So it's possible that by putting in, say, Lactobacillus acidophilus, that even though you can't recover it in the stool, that you say, oh, it's useless, it didn't do anything, that its presence may orchestrate or guide the populations of other bacteria in the intestinal tract.
Right, feeding the other bacteria, helping...
Feeding or inhibiting them or competing with them in some way.
Helping with the digestion and absorption of our nutrition,
even, you know.
Also for the prevention of certain conditions like kidney stones. There's a particular strain of probiotic.
Yeah, the future, and I actually had an interesting conversation with Dr. Mark Davis, who is an expert on poop, on poop replacement therapy. Mm-hmm. It's called fecal transfer. And I said, you know, where's this headed? You know, what's going to happen? He says, well, he believes that within 5 or 10 years, certainly within the next, you know, couple of decades, they will probably have targeted probiotics. Mm-hmm. That will be designed for conditions like ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, or designed to enhance immunity, say, in people who have low resistance.
Yes.
For example, they just had one that has been patented and is being introduced, and it's kind of a Pac-Man for cholesterol. It helps to lower cholesterol significantly by double digits. By virtue of changing the enterohepatic circulation of bile, which influences the hepatic production of cholesterol. It's quite fascinating. And so there will be a kind of a gold rush to discover which species do what. Mm-hmm. We have RegActive, one of our sponsors,
cardiac, liver, and immune,
which generates glutathione. It has the unique property of generating glutathione, which is a good thing. And so we can introduce these things in a targeted way and not, right now it's sort of hit or miss. It's like, take this, see if it works, you know.
Yeah.
Or also, you know, some that are designed to treat irritable bowel.
Yes.
And that is the goal of, you know, what's the yogurt that's popular in the supermarkets? The, I don't know.
Greek yogurt, Stonyfield, organic.
Well, it's not just a brand name. It's got a specific name that's supposed to sort of help irritable bowel. They can't really make the claim.
Oh, DanActive or something
like
that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
They're all fruit flavored and sugared and all that other kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, at least that's the idea.
Yeah. Okay, so the probiotics would depend on what you're using them for.
The ultimate one would be the weight loss one.
Oh, the weight loss one. Oh,
right.
Sure.
Which introduces the good bacteria that
everybody's going to line up.
They eat your calories before they get to you.
They eat your calories. They will line up around the block for that the way they line up for the new iPhone, if they did. I don't know.
And hopefully it won't cost $1,000.
No. Like, for example, a particular probiotic is especially good after a round of antibiotics, something called Culturelle. But we like Dr. O'Hara's as well.
We do know, for example, that Saccharomyces boulardii is helpful for patients with C. difficile diarrhea. Mm-hmm. That's targeted specifically.
But actually, that's even better than the Culturelle to take during antibiotic treatment to prevent.
Because it's a fungal species, it's not even killed by the antibiotics.
Right.
So
that's when Candida and other stuff can overgrow, as well as C. diff.
Yeah.
So it really depends. Some people will take a probiotic through cold and flu season. Other people take it for bowel regularity and
And there's an argument to be made that older individuals have a reduction in their diversity. You know, we're all about diversity these days. You know, diversity in colleges, diversity in job market, diversity in our movies.
We need multicultures in our GI tracts.
So we have movies about the Vikings, and you see there's a black guy. But you know, they got a story. You know, he kind of came up from Africa and became
a Viking.
He paddled up, on a Viking raid, they captured him, and that, so that's diversity in our media,
right?
And we need diversity in our intestinal tracts because the more diversity we have, the healthier we are. When we have a very narrow band of organisms in our intestinal tract, that's generally associated with poor health. You know who has the most diversity is the people who live in the Amazon, and you know the primitive tribes. They looked at their poop and they had the most diverse flora imaginable. And then the guy who did the study said, "Well, I'm going to just hang out with these people and eat the way they do." And he did a before and after.
Oh, okay.
And he survived.
Okay.
You know, because not everything is like, you know, washed with with what do you call it? The stuff that they use to wash things down, you know, Lysol.
Right.
But he then developed the same diversity or similar diversity.
Wow. So think about those characteristics too. More natural foods, more whole foods, fresh. Very, very fresh. Nothing processed. All of those. No preservatives, no additives, any of that. No antibiotics.
Which kill the diversity.
Right.
Right.
These tribes aren't taking antibiotics.
And the water you drink contains the same stuff that they use to keep swimming pools disinfected with, which is chlorine.
Exactly.
You're drinking pool water, in effect.
Right, right. And you know what? For anybody who's concerned about the chlorine and have whole house filters, we get more chlorine in a hot shower by inhaling the fumes than kind of through the skin.
Mm.
Yeah. It's kind of the same with aluminum a little bit. We get more of that from antiperspirants than our aluminum cookware.
Oh.
So you don't have to throw away your aluminum cookware, but yeah, better safe than sorry. Don't cook in aluminum foil either.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, so Ray, thank you for your question. Take your probiotics. This comes from Heather. We have an email. Hello, I wanted to buy vitamin C, preferably in powder form, and make my own capsules. Why? Okay.
You know, it's like, I saw a guy in the subway the other day,
and
he was rolling his own cigarette.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't pot. It really was Bugle tobacco out of the pouch.
Oh, my.
When I was a smoker, and when I was first a smoker in Europe, that's what the Europeans did, and I tried to do it. But it's hard to roll a good cigarette, especially... In a subway when you're on your iPhone with one hand and you're rolling your cigarette.
Oh,
he was able to do it. So making your own vitamin C.
Yeah, yeah. In powder form, make my own capsules. I'm confused on what the best vitamin C is.
I'm not sure why I do that. I mean, maybe it's better because there's less excipients or ingredients, you know, maybe.
Maybe. Is it liposomal or ascorbic acid or something else?
I think... Liposomal makes claims that it is better.
I'm hearing more about liposomal.
That it's better absorbed, and I don't think the studies are really there to show that.
It's a water-soluble vitamin.
Yes, and liposomal means incorporating it in a liposome, so it's absorbed more like a fat might be absorbed.
Yeah, I don't know what advantage that might bring. Okay.
I would have to see, studies, you know, like they do with drugs to see how the drugs are absorbed and whether they reach... blood levels with the liposomal and rigorous studies to be convinced that it's worth the extra money for those. I do like ester C.
I like ester C myself.
And part of that is because ester C is buffered and it's less irritative.
And they come in capsules, Heather, already.
Yeah. And it tastes lousy in powder. It really does taste bad.
There's also buffered vitamin C powder.
Yeah, I'll also say that I think vitamin C taken as a powder is a little burny.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yes,
on the esophagus. So
right. As far as your own capsule, I mean, most good quality vitamin capsules are gelatin based. They're just fine. Some people think they're taking plastic.
Oh.
When they see a capsule, well,
some of them are potato starch too. People who want to be vegans, they don't want the gelatin
which comes
from animal hooves. So they take there's now potato starch.
Yeah.
That's transparent and made into capsules.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I was a little taken aback by some people who believe those capsules are plastic, and I'm taking all this plastic. No, you're not taking any plastic.
Mm.
That's not... So set the record straight on that. It's either a gelatin or potato starch.
Patients say the darndest things, don't
they? Yeah, yeah.
We'll do one more.
Yeah, okay, let's see. Oh, this comes from Dan. Hi, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. I've been reading about a new flu shot for those over 65, mm-hmm. of which I'm a member.
Right.
I know you have reservations about flu shots, but are these shots more effective than the traditional ones? Thank you both for the excellent information.
Well, the way this came about is for this reason, is that the flu shot has been a flop for precisely the population that needs it the most, mm-hmm. is the elderly are more vulnerable. Now, if you're a hale and hearty person and you get the flu, generally, with exceptions, you have a few days of misery and then you're okay. But right. if you're older and you have a heart problem or you're feeble, yes. you might get pneumonia, and it's devastating. And so in nursing homes, where the people live under close conditions, are ravaged by flu epidemics.
Yes.
So the problem is you'd give someone with a crappy immune system a flu shot and it doesn't take.
Mm.
So this year, they're introducing a new amped up flu vaccine that's not for regular folks, but for folks over, 60 or 65. And so my recommendation is that a lot of people are going to take it. We should see, number one, if it's effective.
Okay.
And number two, if it's not going to cause problems, because anything that's amped up, you put more adjuvant in there, it's stronger. Mm. And it has the potential to cause more side effects.
Mm.
And what they're doing is they're saying, it's your average 65-year-old. Well, what's the average immunity of a 65-year-old? It could be all over the block.
Exactly.
Perhaps I'm naive or, deluded to think that I have a pretty darn good immune system and I just got my Medicare card. So I would be eligible for this as uh-huh. of my birthday this year. And I'm not thinking of taking it. And I'm wondering, if you give someone with normal immunity an amped up shot, could it be possibly, overkill?
Yes.
And
that's not a demographic that needs more side effects for any reason.
Right, right.
Right? Especially right. if there are multiple medications or something like that.
So that's really... the dictum is don't be the first kid on the block to try a new drug or therapy.
Yeah, yeah. So more testing would be in order then.
Right.
Right? Okay.
Now, on the other hand, I will say that there's some people, they're sitting ducks for some, they're right on the tipping point on a slippery banana peel in terms of their health. And maybe, like somebody who has really bad lung power, they might need that because if they even get a little bronchitis, it's going to tip them into hospitalization.
Yes.
Or be life-threatening.
Yeah.
Or someone, perhaps who is diabetic, where... Whenever diabetics get sick, they get totally decompensated.
Yes.
And that can be catastrophic. So somebody who's an insulin-dependent diabetic, I can see that maybe.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Dan, thank you for your question. Best of luck to you. All right, Dr. Hoffman.
I think that wraps it up. It's been a good session. We thank you for those great questions.
Yes.
Questions, I think, of general interest to our audience. And we hope that we've been helpful and authoritative in terms of your interests. And so until next time, please, if you haven't already, subscribe to our newsletter. Check out our wonderful supplement dispensary at FullScript. All you have to do is go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, and the drop-down menu takes you to FullScript, mm-hmm. where you can register, and then you can peruse thousands of supplements, many of which are hard to get supplements, difficult to get mm-hmm. via the usual means on the internet and in retail stores. And check us out on Facebook and Twitter. And please listen to our podcasts, the additional podcasts that we do, interviews, and special focus podcasts on subjects of interest. We'll be back next week. Thank you, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, everybody.